Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terrell Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Man, we are just inching closer and closer to this NFL draft coming. I can't wait. It's like a kid waiting to unwrap a present. I know that's how you guys are also. So one of the presents, the possibilities for a present could be Notre Dame left tackle Joe Alt. And we have Joe on the show today, so we'll definitely talk a little shop with him. We got Chris Sanders coming on, Run TMC. But throughout it all, we got my guy, David James.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Making it happen, man. And I guess since Joe Alt is on the show, we need to make this O-line centric. And I want to just look at this age-old chicken versus the egg analysis of the receiver and wide receiver and offensive line position. And I think, you know, you look at those two, the battle, and I want to get into that with Chris also. When he comes on, you look at the two, right? And you got the thought process that the game is won in the trenches. And it 100% is. You heard what Jim Harbaugh said, just as far as, you know, it's the sole position that's not impacted by others. I don't agree with it, but I get what he's saying. Any football coach, any football savant, they will tell you the offensive line is one of the most important positions. And I think that is definitely true. The receiver position is also important, and you look at some of the things that have been mentioned, whereas, you know, Brian Callahan said that it's important for the receivers to play a role in the protection plan as well. Now, obviously, he's not saying stay on the edge and block Bud Dupree. He's saying, you know, you got to get open faster, and you got to get ready for the quarterback quicker, get yourself in a situation where you're able to be targeted quicker, and that's you look at Denard Wilson, right? And when I asked him about LeJarius Sneed and that aggressiveness, and he talked about, you know, getting that defensive line an extra tick to get to the quarterback by jamming and being aggressive with the receivers at the line. Well, vice versa for the receivers. You get open quickly. So I love when this type of talk is generated because, I mean, I don't think you could go wrong either way. And I think the Bengals, they were a good example of that. Now, obviously, Joe Burrow, man, like, you know, as a rookie, he was sacked. I think it was a crazy amount of times. I want to say they gave up, 48 sacks, and he was sacked like 32 of them. So it's a lot. It's a lot. And obviously, you know, in December, it was a week 12, you know, he had the ACL. He was hit in the pocket. Going into that offseason, the Bengals had a dilemma, right? They had to pick at number 5. Penei Sewell was going to be there. Ja'Marr Chase was going to be there. And they had to figure out, okay, do we want to get the pass catcher for our quarterback? Or do we want to get the personal protector? Brian Callahan had actually touched on that, and he said he landed on the side of Ja'Marr Chase because he wanted the guy to caught touchdowns. You know, that's what he told Jarrett Stillman right here on 102.5 The Game. And it makes sense. Now, I'll say this. That situation was very unique. It's very rare that you have a quarterback, right, that did what he did, Joe Burrow, at LSU. And a year later, you have the opportunity to add the guy that was one of the primary targets when he did it. So the Bengals had that luxury, right? They had the luxury of seeing Ja'Marr Chase do what he did with Joe Burrow. I mean, these guys, national championship, you know the story. So they were looking at it from a different lens than this Titans team is now. Now, obviously, Penei Sewell, he was the Outland Trophy Award winner. That's the best lineman in the nation. At Oregon, he was killing it. He's been a huge part in things for Detroit, turning things around. I don't think you could have gone wrong at either pick. I think the Bengals made the right choice, though. Now, you look, the following year, you know, 51 sacks they gave up. Look, that game right here, I mean, good gracious, 9 sacks. Jeff Simmons had 2 called back, so it should have been 11. But I think when you look at what they were able to do despite that because of Burrow and also Chase, remember, one of their few touchdowns came early when Burrow hit Chase on a short route. He caught it. Christian Fulton had a bad angle and slipped. Burrow skated a while, and then that led to one of their scores. But then also, you look late in the game, you know, after that interception, it was Chase who came up with the big play to set them up for the field goal. Yeah, they got sacked a bunch of times, but good gracious, Jamar Chase had a lot to do with them being in position to win that game. So I say all that to say, you look at this Titans team. We got Joe Alt coming on. You look at this Titans team at number 7. What do you do? Do you go Joe Alt? If Malik Nabers is there, do you go Malik Nabers? It's a different but similar situation. Look, Will Levis, just like Burrow as a rookie, was sacked. Levis was sacked 28 times. They gave up 64. He was sacked 28. So, as a rookie, both of these guys were battered, right? Now, both of these teams need help on the offensive line, right? That 2021 Bengals team, they needed this 2024 Titans team. They needed it, right? And you look at adding Calvin Ridley. You look at DeAndre Hopkins coming back. At that time, you know, they ended up they had T. Higgins and, you know, Tyler Boyd. Two solid receivers. I probably wouldn't say on the same par as Ridley and Hopkins, but two solid receivers there. But they turned around and they added another one. And that offensive line, I mean, they had Quentin Spain starting at left guard. Like, it wasn't exactly the best offensive line, but they made it work. I think when you look at this Titans team at 7, it's a different situation to me in that I don't know that they could make it work. And I don't know that this team is a wide receiver away from winning it all. I don't know that they're a left tackle away from winning it all. But all things remaining equal, seeing the beating that Will Levis took, because it wasn't only 28 sacks. He was getting rocked. Even times when he threw the football, it wasn't sacked. I feel you have to go tackle if Joe Alt is there. Joe Alt versus Nabers. I'm going Joe Alt. I think Joe Alt is the most pro-ready prospect in this draft. You hear the promos on the station on 102.5 where I say that. I think he is. Now, obviously, like any other prospect, he has some warts. But, man, there's a lot of shining parts, too. 64 sacks allowed last year, right? This is a team that, if it was third and long, you almost forget it. You take the playbook, your play card sheet, and you wipe out half of it. Because if you're in third and long, likely pass rushing situations, those guys couldn't hold up. Now, Andre Dillard is gone. Jalen Duncan is still there. You got Nicholas Petit-Ferrer and Dylan Raiders competing at right tackle. Raiders actually is going to be competing at guard, I believe it was. So, I mean, look, man, I put it this way. The options aren't the most attractive. I think if you're weighing what the Titans have receiver-wise on their roster versus what they have O-line-wise, you got to add juice to that O-line. Now, Joe Alt, he's not exactly juicy, you know what I mean? But he's one of those guys that just comes in and gets it done. And you look at his track record, I mean, you're talking about 4 career sacks allowed. 3 of those came as a true freshman. 24 or 28 pressures allowed. 11 of them came as a true freshman. Yeah, he's legit. And I'm looking forward to talking to him about, you know, some of the things that he went through at Notre Dame, you know, and what makes him such a pro-ready prospect. But I think if all things remain equal, Joe Alt should be the pick. And it almost is, like, too natural to be true. You have the best prospect matching the biggest need and falling to you at 7. You almost have to do it. Now, if they trade out, I understand them doing it. I know that J.C. Latham is a guy that is rated highly on their board and many other boards. But how far back do you trade out? And to what advantage? You know, Minnesota calls saying 11 and 23. Yeah, let's have it. You know, honestly, I would strongly consider Vegas, if they talked about 13 and 44 for seven. It really comes down to this. What are you happy with? Joe Alt and Darius Robinson? Or would you rather have Olufashinu, J.C. Latham, one of those guys with, so let's use the Raiders one. So you have pick 13, 38, and 44. So you have Olufashinu, J.C. Latham, one of those guys with Darius Robinson, maybe Troy Franklin. And then you come back at 44 and you have another prospect. So now you have three, essentially what it comes down to is would you rather have three top 100 picks with one of them not being a top 10 or one of them being a top 10 and two top 100 picks? That's really what it boils down to. Now, again, if the Vikings call and they talk about 11 and 23, that's a trade that you make indubitably to talk like Darnell Jefferson in the program. That's a trade that you got to make, right? And so then you're looking at possibly Alt. I don't think it's likely, but possibly Alt. More than likely, Fashanu, Fuaga, Latham, you know, at 11. And then you come back at 23, and now you could Brian Thomas. You could go Keon Coleman. You could go Xavier Leggett. There's a lot of options there. A.D. Mitchell, if he's there, if you want that pure speed, Xavier Worthy may be there, too, at 23. So there's a lot that you could do there. So I definitely go that route. But I really look at this as one of three ways. Trade back. Top offensive lineman or top receiver. I don't see this going any other direction. And if I'm the Titans, that's the way I look at it. Now, obviously, J.J. McCarthy, you know, being on the board. Bo Nix maybe being on the board. I don't really see a team trading. It depends on what happens with McCarthy. There's a possibility, you know, maybe the Raiders try to leapfrog, but who would be – or maybe – so you got three teams. You got Denver, you got the Raiders – and you got the Vikings, who just absolutely need to look at quarterbacks. So let's say Denver moves up. Well, let's use the likelihood. Let's say Minnesota moves up to get McCarthy. Now, you know, Bo Nix is on the board. Michael Penix is on the board. Do they just want to allow them to, you know, as the Raiders, do you want to, or the Broncos, do you want to see who falls out of those two, or do you want to dictate who you want and go get them? And I think that's where that seven pick is going to be really cool looking at that. So wanted to just kind of open up and talk a little draft and some options with that first pick. 38 is going to be interesting too. But again, like both of these positions are the deepest in this draft and have almost historical deepness, depth to them. So it's really good for the Titans that both of these are positions where they need. So we'll see what direction they go there. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. Come back with a little Run TMC. I want to extend this conversation.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run TMC. For you. Fresh.
Yeah. All right, the music fades, the lights dim. And now, coming to you live from Oakland, California. Starting at center for your Golden State Warriors.
Oh, wow.
Out of Colgate University. Number 31, Adano Foyle.
Now, sorry for the Los Angeles Lakers, Bob McAdoo.
Another one of those microphone afros.
Man, what's cracking lacking, dude? It's almost that time for that draft. What's going on, man?
Hey, listen, man, it's definitely almost that time. Ooh. And that dilemma that the Titans are in is something that I've been thinking about an awful lot because, look, at number seven, they are going to have a shot at possibly the top offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And on some boards, the top wide receiver. I think Malik Nabers may be there. Rome Odunze probably will. So you got those. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be gone. But Joe Alt. Be there as well. So when you look at that offensive line versus wide receiver position, how do you weigh that out? What is more important?
You know, it's kind of tough because you got to go back to the you know, the head coach of the Tennessee Titans where he used to coach at you know, for the Cincinnati Bengals. He was in the same dilemma, you know, years and years ago when he had Jamar Chase. So now you got a situation where the offensive line was struggling, but also you got a playmaker wide receiver. And what did he do? He went for the playmaker with Jamar Chase and then later on tried to fix the offensive line. Now he's in the same dilemma this year. What is he going to do? He's got some top offensive tackles. He got Joe Alt, you know, from Notre Dame. He's got I pronounce the name so bad. Fioga, how to pronounce it? From
Fuaga,
Oregon State.
Fuaga
from Ohio, from Oregon State. And then you got Latham from Alabama. You got Mims from Georgia. And then also a guy that I like that I just started been paying attention to is Graham Barton. I mean, I kind of like him from Duke, a guy that's kind of physical and who's a mauler. But then you got a slew of receivers, man, after Marvin Harrison. Like you said, they got Nabers, they got Odunze, they got Coleman from Florida State, they got Thomas from LSU, they got Franklin from Oregon. I mean, you got Mitchell from Texas, you got Pollock from Washington. I mean, all these great wide receivers. And also, you know, Leggett from South Carolina. So you got all these players at wide receiver. But do you address the offensive line or do you go wide receiver? That's the dilemma that he kind of asks.
Well, what are your thoughts on, because you mentioned, you know, the Franklins, the Colemans, the Leggetts, and those guys. Well, what are your thoughts on the depth of the offensive line position against the depth of the receiver position? Rand Carthon, every time he's asked, he mentions the depth of the O-line position.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some depth. I mean, because if you look at, you know, the guys that are there, Petit Ferrer, who's playing left tackle, he's still an unknown. You got Skoronski that's playing left guard. You got Cushenberry that's playing center. You got Brunskill, you know, that's playing right guard. And then you have, you know, Radens that we don't know where he's going to be at. So if you look at that, those guys that I just named, what name sticks out on the line right now? Cushenberry and Skoronski. So basically, in my opinion, and I may be right, I'm not saying I'm right, but you still got to address the offensive line because you're still kind of thin at that position.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the depth at the position in the draft.
As far as like
what's available to you, how deep you could go before you can't get a guy that's an instant impact.
But it's so deep, though. I mean, you made a great point that they're both at deep positions. Their wide receiver's deep, and O-line is really, really deep. And I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think you can maybe get a lineman in a second or fourth round because I don't think we have a third rounder. So I still think you can get a quality offensive tackle because it's so deep.
Right, and that's the thing that I'm curious about because there are people of the thought process that, hey, you can't find – you know, if you want an offensive lineman, a guy that's going to be impactful, like you got to get him in the first round. Where are you on that?
I mean, it's not just a first round guy. I mean, he just got to come in and be an impact player. And some of the guys that you can get lower in the draft, they can come in and help that we're not really talking about. I know we're talking about the Alts, the Mims, and guys like that. But there's a kind of a guy that I like also from Arizona, Jordan Morgan. Morgan, I know he needs to get stronger, but he can still maybe come in here and play. Then you got a guy, Tyler Gutton from Oklahoma, a big physical guy who's a mauler. Technique is very, very awesome. So even though people say that if you don't get a lineman or a tackle or whoever in the first round, then you still can't get him in the late round, it's hogwash.
Yeah, Oklahoma's Tyler Gutton. I've had Mike Tannenbaum. He compared him to DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
See what I'm saying?
He drafted him, you know, in the – with the Jets, you know, back in the day. So I thought that's intriguing that you mentioned Guyton.
Yeah.
When you look at the receiver position, as far as the ability to come in and contribute immediately, is that possible at pick number 106?
1,000. I mean, I got picked the 67th pick, and I was a third rounder. And I just think that the guy that you draft in that low position, you know, you expect him to play, but it's really not a loss. But if he comes in and plays, then that's just an asset to your team. And I think, too, people got to understand that even if you're getting picked at 106th pick, you still can be an impact player. Look at Derek Mason. Derek Mason, I think he got picked in the fourth or fifth round, and now he's going to probably be a Hall of Famer one day. So you still have some quality guys you can pick later on in the round.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think, you know, it's going to be very fascinating seeing how they do this.
Yeah.
You mentioned not having a third round pick. Do you think it would be suicide for them to pass on Joe Alt at 7 and go back to trade back?
I mean, I think they need to get that guy, you know, and the reason why I'm saying they need to really get him because, you know, he's a talent. I mean, he's a big physical guy. He's 6'8", and you just can't pass him up. I understand that, you know, you want to maybe trade back to maybe Minnesota and maybe pick up another pick and maybe think you can still get a great offensive line guy. But when you're talking about a big guy from Joe Alt from Notre Dame, I mean, you just can't pass up a 6'8 physical tackle like that that can come in and benefit not just the offensive line but also benefit Will Levis.
Well, let me ask you this also, because you look at the receiver position, right? And you look at a guy like Neighbors. You look at Brock Bowers. Like, these are guys where you line up a shotgun, you catch it, and you throw it to them, and they get you the free yards. That helps pass pro, right? Because it's catch and throw. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example by just saying it. I mean, it just makes it easy because if you're getting the ball out quick and get it into a receiver that's shifting and that has yards after the catch, it just makes your job so easy because when you have a situation like that, the quarterback really doesn't have to go through his read progress. He can just say, okay, you know what, I see the guy off coverage, throw him the quick ball, you don't have to pass pro, let those guys make plays, and it just makes everybody better, TD.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating watching everything play out. Do you think they need linemen more than receivers?
You know, I think they do. I mean, but both positions need to be addressed. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of hard because, you know, you still can get a good receiver in a lower round, but then also, you know, you want to make sure you protect your quarterback because if you don't protect your quarterback, you can have all the doggone receivers you want, and you get your quarterback, he's going to be real antsy in the pocket. So, you know, if they go receiver, it'll be a win-win situation. If they go with an offensive line, it'll be a win-win situation. Even if they go with an edge rusher, Dallas Turner, it's a win-win situation.
All right, so let's go through some scenarios.
Yes.
Alt versus Neighbors, where do you go?
Alt versus Neighbors. I'm going to go with Alt.
Okay, let's go through the next one. Alt versus Odunze.
I still got to go with Alt.
Alt versus Olu Fashanu.
I'm still going to go with Alt.
Okay, so let's flip it.
Yeah.
Or let's go this way.
Sure.
Alt versus J.C. Latham.
I'm still going to go with Alt.
All right. So Alt is your unanimous pick there.
He's my guy.
Alt versus trade back. Alt versus trade back.
I'm still going to go with Alt, man.
Okay. So let's go this way then.
Sure.
Neighbors versus Fashion.
No, Neighbors. Lord have mercy.
Okay. Neighbors versus Latham.
I'm going to go with Neighbors.
Okay. Fashion versus Latham.
I'm going to go with Latham.
Gotcha. You flip them to the left side?
Yes, at 1,000.
Okay. Yes, I agree with that. I think, you know, with Latham, the big thing is the penalties, and I think having a technician coach like Callahan, Bill Callahan that is, can help improve that because it's all footwork, right? You get penalties. You get penalties when you're caught out of position as an offensive lineman.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, and he's a big kid. What, 6'6", 360?
Yeah.
Come on.
He's going to have the folks over there at the facility to cook. He's going to have to be working overtime. All right, last thing before we get up out of here. Neighbors, Fashanu, Latham. I don't take Fashanu or Latham at 7, period. I don't do that. So, all right, Neighbors at 7 versus trade back. What direction do you go?
I'll go with Neighbors.
Okay. Hey, those are all scenarios that could play out.
Happen.
And that's all right.
That's
you know what? I got to do this last one.
Sure.
I don't think it happens, but Marvin Harrison Jr. versus Joe Alt.
Dude, you are you going to make me hang up on you? Marvin Harrison.
Okay. I was just checking.
What?
You said alt over everything else. So I just said, well,
no. We weren't talking about Marvin Harrison. No. If he drops down, dude, I'm doing a high jump, a long jump, a triple jump, a something jump, a broad jump to get back up there and get that dude, man. That's a dude right there. That's a game changer.
No doubt
about it. That's a game changer.
I agree 100%. So we'll see how it all works out, man. I think this is going to be just a fun
yes, it
draft
is.
To watch, man. That's for sure.
I can't wait. Man, I can't wait.
Hey, listen, so on another note, right? I like to make sure my daughters are in tune with older music, right?
Oh,
and so my one daughter, Deja, she knows I love New Edition, right? And so we're watching the video, and it was Can You Stand the Rain? And in the beginning, you know, you got the beat goes, and then it comes in, and the guy's like, love unconditional. Right? And he got this, you know, the white shirt on.
Yeah,
it's unbuttoned, and his chest is out, and he's with the S-curl box. And my daughter looks to me, she said, I never, ever would have thought that guy you do radio with would dress up like that. He seems like such an upstanding and clean guy. I said, baby, that ain't Chris Sanders, that's Johnny Gill.
Oh, wow. Well, guess what? I got one in the chambers. Me and my baby was watching football, right? And she's like, baby, you're so good. I love when you make those plays. In 1999, you got a touchdown against him. You are good. Let's watch some old basketball. I said, okay, baby, let's go back and watch the Lakers. So this guy walks out. He's got a little baby afro. And he runs out in his shorts. He's about 6'6", 6'7", something like that. And my baby nerves. She's like, baby, I did not know TD was that tall and could play basketball like that. I said, baby, that's not TD. That's Michael Cooper.
We out on that note.
This is Peter Skoronski, and I'm talking with TD.
That's right. Back from the break, talking with TD. You heard Peter Skoronski bring us back. And you heard Welcome to the Jungle. Both of those are relevant to our next guest because he's going to be welcomed to the jungle of the NFL. And it could be a situation where it's run left for the Titans because left tackle from Notre Dame, the top prospect on the offensive line, Joe Alt, is next up here. And what's going on, Joe?
Good. Nothing much. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you coming on. I definitely look forward to talking a little shop with you. So I guess first things first, man, I want to ask you about your recent experience, you know, as part of the USAA salute to service. You know, you got to tour the facility there. What were some of the highlights there?
Yeah, you know, for me, I was fortunate enough to be able to partner with USAA here before the draft and was able to head out to Detroit to Selfridge Air National Air Base. And, you know, for me, the highlights, I always start with the people. I was able to meet so many military members and hear their stories and able to compare them to the stories I've heard from my grandfathers who served in the Army and just really got to get to know them and get to know, you know, I'm more on a personal level, which was really cool for me. And, you know, I took a lot of respect from, I mean, I gained a lot of respect for them and what they do and, you know, hear from them. And I also was able to tour the base and got to see some pretty cool stuff and was able to end up flying a Blackhawk helicopter over Detroit and over the draft site. And it was, you know, for me, it was just a great experience overall. I always want to, you know, give my gratitude and appreciation for those who serve because, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, play the sport of football and do what I love without them. And, you know, overall, just a great, great experience. And, you know, I learned a lot. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt. You kind of got to experience a day in the life there. For you personally, you mentioned your family and having a military background there. How much did that have to do with how this whole thing got set up for you to take part in?
Yeah, you know, military has always been very important to me and my family just because of my grandfathers. And, you know, I didn't meet one of my grandfathers who passed before I was born, and my other passed when I was three. So I didn't, you know, wasn't able to have necessarily, you know, personal connections with them and hear their stories, but I was able to see how they raised my parents and, you know, how they raised me and just see those traits that I also was able to see, you know, in those military members. And for me, it was just, you know, it was really cool experience to see how similar they are and, you know, what they believe in, what they're passionate about was really something special for me.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you got to fly in some pretty high, you mentioned the Black Hawk chopper. I'm sure that was an experience going up and going down. And we're talking to Notre Dame left tackle Joe Alt. How would you weigh that against being stuck in a situation where you have to block TJ Watt?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit smoother, you know, when you fly in a Black Hawk helicopter, the takeoff and the landing are a little bit, you know, that's kind of when you get the little jolt in your stomach versus, you know, TJ Watt's going to be a battle, you know, from play one to the end of the game. So, you know, I don't know if you're going to get that nice kind of coasting in the middle where you're flying, but, you know, it's a cool experience and, you know, looking forward to the next step as well with that, those opportunities that present themselves.
Absolutely. And with that being said, Joe, when you look at your body of work, I mean, we're talking about 4 sacks allowed over your career. 3 of those came, you know, in your true freshman season. What was it that made you grow so much, you know, from that freshman year to now?
Yeah, you know, I give a lot to the coaching I receive. You know, I was fortunate to have 3 offensive line coaches in 3 years and was able to learn so much about them. And, you know, going into my sophomore year, I learned a ton about, you know, offensive line play from my offensive line coach, Coach Heastand. He taught me so much about technique and, you know, the proper way to play offensive line, the proper way to, you know, carry yourself, and also from my father and just his knowledge and allowing me to grow as a player. You know, for me, I think that was, you know, where I really learned the game of football and the game of offensive line play and how, you know, the competition works and how you have to battle, snap in, snap out. There's no plays off. You really got to be in. So, you know, I learned a ton over my career, and, you know, I give a lot to my coaching and my father who coached me from the side. You know, I got a lot of great people in my corner who have allowed me to grow as a player.
Yeah, and it's crazy you mentioned that because, like, you're one of those guys where I look at, like, you're a gold star prospect. It's like, okay, it's tough to find something wrong, right? But, you know, as always, when you have a guy like yourself that's so good for so long, you suffer that prospect fatigue. And you look at some of the analysts and they say, oh, well, you know, he's more of a finesse or passive blocker, this, that, and the third. And I think it's just nitpicking, but how do you respond, you know, and say, well, that's not really the issue?
Yeah, you know, for me, there's always new people out there who, you know, want to look at my game and, you know, assess my game. And for me, you know, I always go back myself and, you know, the level I hold myself at. And for me, you know, what I play to my strengths and how I, you know, see myself, you know, playing the best. And for me, that's using my athleticism, my length, the best of my ability in pass pro, you know, being able to keep guys away, but also be able to stay in front of them. And in the run game, you know, just continue to be able to use my size, again, keeping my length, getting guys away from me towards the end of blocks, and, you know, being able to stay attached to guys in the second level. So for me, you know, I always look to play to my strengths, and I don't, you know, look too much into, you know, people assessing my game. I really focus more on the coaches and what they're, you know, what they're telling me.
I love that. You identify what you do well and hone in on that. That's the way you do it, and that's how great coaches do also, right? Identify what their players do well, and let's put them in situations to showcase that. And we're talking to Notre Dame left tackle Joe Alt. That being said, when you look at your height, right, 6'9", is it tougher to block some of those shorter pass rushers? Like, you know, you look at a guy like Harold Landry, he's 6'1", 6'2". How do you go about handling those guys coming off the edge that naturally have that leverage against you?
Yeah, you know, for me, obviously my height is always something I'm, you know, worried about my pad level. So I'm always trying to play as low as I can, but also being able to function out of it and still being able to move at my maximum speed. You know, you don't want to get too low where then you can't, you know, function at a high level. So it's always something I'm really trying to, you know, work with and work on. And, you know, with the shorter guys, the big thing in preparation for me, depending on who I'm playing, you know, if it's going to be a shorter, faster guy, a shorter guy who likes to, you know, play more power, a bigger, longer guy, it's like, you know, for me, it's all about preparation and what I see. And then I really like to kind of hone in my drills of that week to what I'm going to be seeing. So if it's a shorter guy, then I'm going to have, you know, when I'm working, you know, some post-practice stuff, a guy holding the bag a little bit lower, just so I'm used to striking lower. And, you know, that just naturally allows me to learn, like, all right, I got to bend more this game, or I got to be, you know, sitting in my stance different a little bit, just so I can be able to, you know, play at the highest level against the guy I'm going against that week.
Who are some of the guys you watch? Like, I saw you mention Joe Thomas and Lane Johnson, who – Lane is a good friend of mine, so I smiled when I saw you mentioned him as somebody that you watch. But what is it about those guys that stands out to you?
Yeah, you know, starting with Joe Thomas, I think for me with him, it's his changeup of sets, his ability to both short set guys and get on them early and kind of take the fight to them. But then also understanding, you know, third down, having it set vertically and, you know, play with your guard and be ready for, you know, twists and games from the defense. I think, you know, his set repertoire and how he changes it up and, you know, kind of keeps, instead of being on his toes with defenders coming at him, he puts the defenders on their toes on what they're going to see from him, which I think is something really special. And then, you know, going to Lane Johnson, obviously he's a, you know, a freak athlete and is really special in his own way. And, you know, it's not something that you can really, you know, rap or try to get at. He's just a freak athlete, which is so impressive. But for me, I like to look at his mental side of the game and how he approaches it, you know, with his mind and how he talks with the snap count. And just, you know, there's that split little time there where you can be offsides or early as possible in the snap count and just put yourself in the best situation, you know, to approach that block. And that's the stuff that I look at in those two guys.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned the twists and the stunts. I go back to that Ohio State game, JT and Michael Hall. They were trying to work that on you guys. You handled it pretty well. Was that the most challenging game that you had?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think this year that definitely was, you know, that's a front seven who is very physical. And, you know, like I said, they know their strengths. They know what they're good at. And they play well with each other. They play well as a group, and definitely was a, you know, a challenging game that, you know, I thought as an offensive line, we, you know, were prepared going into it. You know, we didn't end up with the victory, but I thought we as an offensive line played, you know, to our strengths as well. And I thought it was a really fun game for us to go out there and, you know, compete at a high level.
And we're talking to Notre Dame left tackle Joe Alt. Outside of Lane Johnson and Joe Thomas, have you watched Taylor Lewan at all?
I have, yeah, I definitely have. You know, with him, it's, for me, it's a size comparison with him, with me and him, and, you know, how he played and his physicality in the game. And then, like, his mental edge is something that, you know, I'm always trying to develop. I'm always approach the game cool, calm, and collected. That's how I am. That's how I play my best. But there's that edge you got to play with. And with, you know, watching him, he has that edge, and that's the edge you want to find. You know, every person's edge is different. But just kind of watching other guys and how they have their mental edge is always really interesting to see how you can adapt it to your own game.
Did you get you met with the Titans, right? You were here on a visit?
Yes, I was.
How was that visit? Like, what were some of the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was obviously a great experience overall. I was able to meet with a whole bunch of different people and just got to, you know, learn about them, learn about the process at the Titans and what they, you know, see for me and how they want to me to learn, and being able to meet with both, you know, Coach Brian Callahan and Coach Bill Callahan, and just being able to sit down and talk with them and, you know, assess my game, assess what they see for the future and things like that were very important to me. And, you know, overall it was a great experience.
With Bill Callahan, one of the things that stands out, every O-lineman I talk to, they say the details. You know, it's amazing how detailed he is when he talks the position. Did you guys get into any of that? And if so, did that surprise you, like the depth of he was able to go to?
Yeah, you know, for me, that's what I love. And it, like, that's the one thing I walked out of there was the biggest thing is the way he coaches is so black and white. There is no gray area. Like, he'll tell you exactly where he wants your hands, exactly what set he wants, when. And for me, that makes the game a lot easier to learn from. You're able to go watch your film and see yourself, well, you know, I missed this hand placement, or, you know, this set was too shallow, or this set was too deep. And, you know, it's really easy to, you know, grow and get better faster when you know exactly what a coach wants and you're able to, you know, assess the film and, you know, move forward. That's one of the biggest things I took from, you know, my experience there.
There you have it right there, Joe. I really appreciate you taking the time, man. Hopefully, you know, I cover the Titans here for ESPN, so hopefully, you know, we'll get to talk again, but this time with you getting that number 76, you know, for Tennessee.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your time.
All right, for sure. So that was Joe Alt, man. I'm really excited to talk shop with him. That's a prospect that I've identified as, you know, someone who I feel is the best option for the Titans at 7. We'll see how it plays out. It's just another week closer to draft time. Definitely appreciate Chris Sanders coming on and talking shop. David James, appreciate you.
Appreciate you, bud.
No doubt about it, man. And I hope each of you who are tuning in enjoyed the show. We want to continue to bring you work like this. So definitely make sure you check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.